Welcome to Entertainment Drive Through. Today's specialist, Mark Catalano, guitarist, singer, and composer.
Quiet on the set.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the stage.
Hello, hello, welcome to Entertainment Drive-Thru. I'm Anna, with me is my co-host Dan, and today's guest is a guitarist who's known for his band The Hollowell and then for his work as well. Joining us via Skype is the one, the only, Mark Catalano!
Yeah, welcome to the show!
Hey guys!
How you doing?
Good, thanks for having me.
Absolutely! Now tell us a little bit about yourself, how did you get started?
I was born and raised in Youngstown, Ohio, actually a suburb of Youngstown, Ohio.
No kidding. Hey. So do all my cousins.
Is that true?
Yeah, my cousins live in Boardman and Liberty.
Really? I was going to say I grew up in Boardman.
No Whoa. Kidding. You probably know all my cousins then, the Davis family.
Davises. I bet I do. I feel like I need to look on Facebook right now.
Our neighbor Mike is actually also from Boardman.
Really? Okay, so this is like one of those things that I just don't understand about LA. I continually meet people from Northeast Ohio in LA like on a daily basis. And I don't understand.
They're
it.
Following you.
And Youngstown is such a random place for people to just know other people or like to just randomly hear.
Apparently, we all want to leave.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would leave there, too, if the nicest building in my city was the prison. No
right,
kidding,
sorry.
Though, really. We'll talk later about that. We don't need to bog down with, do you know so-and-so, and you know so-and-so, and...
Yeah.
We'll go for H's.
Shout out to the Davises, I guess,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I guess, yeah.
So, I grew up in Boardman, Ohio, and... started playing drums first and then guitar. I've always sang and I just kind of have always enjoyed music since I was a kid. My brother and my sister were both drummers, and my brother was super into classic rock.
Wow.
He was a few years older than me, so I always looked up to him, and he was always getting me into new music. He was kind of my gateway into classic rock and everything. And
nice.
So,
gotcha.
So from a young age, probably like 10, around 10 years old is when I started really getting into music, and have been playing ever since. I was in a band called Another Found Self. Terrible band name. Another Found Self, referred to as AFS. We were together, started playing out a lot around 2003, and broke up around 2008, and that was when I chose to move to LA.
Gotcha. Wow. And how did you get Hollowell started?
Hollowell is an Orange County band that actually has been together for the better part of like 10 years now.
Oh, wow.
So you got to join the band. I like it.
So I joined the band on lead guitar and backing vocals about 3 years ago.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a four-piece, and they had been kind of just taking a break. Their lead guitarist had been focusing on some other things. He has a wife and kids, and his photography career, you know, was taking up a lot of his time and everything. And so he bowed out, and I had met the rest of those guys in the band just from playing gigs around Orange County. And we just got along, and they needed a guitarist. So there I was.
Nice.
And I love how different like the Hollowell is to your music, which is the Mark Catalano. And and like the film scores you do and all that stuff. I kind of like the diversity.
I like that you don't just say, you know, the stuff you do for Mark Catalano. You say for the Mark Catalano.
And somehow I decided that I didn't want to talk about Hollowell. Apparently, I just made up Holloways. I don't know why. I wanted to be that way. It's just I rename it
slowly. It's just slowly and slowly turning into hallways.
Yes.
Before you know, it's just the hallways to the soul.
Is the hallways to Mark Catalano.
Yeah, exactly. Now, I wanted to ask you, though, when was the moment that you decided you wanted to be a musician? You know, it wasn't going to be being a sidecar driver. You wanted to be a musician.
I don't remember if there was any specific moment, but I definitely do remember certain moments. I definitely remember MTV as a whole, just like the whole idea of MTV and even VH1 being prominent to, like, that was just what I always gravitated to. Like,
and
that was what
you're talking about back when it was music television instead of media television.
Back when it was actually music television. And
you have to see me right now. I'm like almost crying. I'm like, back when it was good. Back when, like, how I got into music too. Like, I'm from Iceland. We get, like, we have a lot of, like, local music and stuff like that. But my connection to foreign music and pop music and stuff like that, that was through MTV and, like, seeing the videos. Yeah. That was the first time I saw, like, music videos and stuff like that.
Yeah, that was the big connection for me. And I just remember little moments, you know, like, my brother got a drum set, and then all of a sudden there was music in the house. You know, there was an instrument in the house, and my dad had a guitar. He had like a little old classical acoustic that he like would never really play. And then there was one day where I started putting on my dad's old records. I would put on his old albums on the record player and started, I don't know why, I just decided I wanted to play guitar. And so I didn't have any idea what I was doing, but I started to pick up this guitar and try to play notes that sounded like they made sense with the music that I was hearing on his records.
Wow. Right.
And I don't really know how I had the intuition to do that, but it was more like bass notes. Mm-hmm. I was almost trying to be more of a bass player and didn't really know it. You know, so there's little moments like that where, and then my dad, you know, saw that I had some interest in guitar. And so he showed me a couple of easy things to play on the guitar. And then from there, I was just kind of hooked.
Right.
But did you take some classes alongside, or did you just sort of one of these guys that just learned by doing?
At a certain point, like little by little, around fourth, fifth, and sixth grade, mm-hmm. I remember my dad like bought me a guitar, like a cheap electric guitar. Aww. and a little amplifier and a few other things. And so I just remember like asking around at school, like if any friends played music as well. So I started getting together with friends and just kind of came up with whatever. We didn't really have any formal training, but mm-hmm. at a certain point, I think I felt like I wanted to get more proficient with guitar. So then I did end up taking lessons from a guy named Justin Staub, who was a friend of my brother's, who they would play music together. And he was like a high school student that was like teaching guitar lessons around town. And yeah, so there was probably like 2 years where I learned from him. And then I was just also really involved in music in school. Like my school's music program, Dan, I don't know if you know this, but Boardman, Ohio's public school music program is actually Grammy Award winning.
No kidding.
No way.
It's a phenomenal public school music program. I was able to be in the orchestra. I was able to be in the marching band, the symphonic concert band, jazz band. They had a great theater and choir program.
I'm so jealous of that. We didn't have any of that.
and now looking back, like I'm really glad that, you know, like we had like a TV department. Like they were showing kids how to work on like multimedia stuff on computers, and it was a really, really awesome place to be able to focus for three, 4 hours sometimes every day for 8 years.
Wow.
That's amazing.
You know, so that was really where I had kind of my classical training.
I gotcha. Now, you've been playing shows, I'm assuming, you know, quite a bit for the past 3 years now. What have you found has worked for you, and what have you found has not worked for you?
Good question. I have found that what works is very simple, and what doesn't work is very simple. And it's just I think a lot of musicians and just artists in general would understand this, that the only, like, your worst enemy is yourself, usually.
So true.
So I think that finding ways to keep myself motivated to just make sure that I do something positive for my music career every day is really important. Like, there's a lot of different facets to the entertainment business, but I feel like as long as I try to tackle something every day, whether it's marketing online or whether it's, you know, writing a song or working on recording something, or whatever it may be, you know, booking a show, rehearsing through a set list, you know, learning a new song, whatever it may be, I feel like I have to just make myself do something every day, because you'll get into these like stagnant times where if you don't work on something for a few days, you feel like you're kind of going nowhere, and then
it gets true.
You, and then it gets you into like a depression where you do more of nothing.
Oh, right. That's so true.
It's just kind of the way that artists fall into pitfalls, I think, especially myself. So for me, it's not one specific thing. It's making sure that I tackle all angles of my career and just try to like keep at it every day.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break to listen to a clip from Twisted Lullaby by Hollowell, but we will be right back. What have been some of your best gigs, or what would you say has been your best gig so far, and then your worst gig?
Hello, you changed your voice.
I do that. You know, it's just because I read this question and I'm just like, all right, well, yeah, best gig, worst gig.
I've had a few. I'm going to start with the worst gigs. So all right. I feel like I've had a few of those. One of them was more recent years. I just remember playing at a bar that is no longer open. It's on the west side in LA, and I was playing acoustic, and I had a nice little crowd, and everyone was being very attentive, and it was kind of mellow. And then there was like a birthday party or something that came in, like stormed into the bar, like 20 people that all were just being just obnoxious and loud and didn't want to hear. It was like they walked into the wrong party. It was like they wanted to probably hear like loud club music or something. And all of a sudden it was like a totally different.
Your music is not loud club music.
No. So it was a totally, which, you know, it's like, I can understand wanting to have a good time and good loud music and drinks and dancing and all that stuff.
Right.
But the vibe at the moment totally flipped on its head.
Aww.
And all of a sudden I just felt like I lost total control of the crowd and no one was listening. And so there was like an hour of just me basically like brooding on stage, like just angrily, like no one paying attention or you know, like I just felt like I totally lost it, you know, which is funny because that kind of thing can happen, you know, that like the switch can just flip where it's strange how, you know, how that sort of thing can go south.
Well, and you'd also be surprised though, as to who's listening.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So what would be one of your best gigs?
So I had been, this was a few years ago. I think it was maybe like February of 2010. There's a couple of videos of it on YouTube that you can find. But I had gotten a random call from a friend who said, "Hey, you're a Foo Fighters fan. Like, you should come down to the Viper Room. I think that Taylor Hawkins of the Foo Fighters."
I knew this story was coming.
Might be there. Yeah.
I would have asked you about it all the way.
So I was like, all right, well, I'd love to go to the show. At the time, I thought that maybe Taylor Hawkins was playing a secret show at the Viper Room with his side project, which is called Hotel Riders.
Right.
So I was like, yeah, I'll show up. And I was like, I don't really have any money. Like, I was like, I guess I'll just go and see how much it costs. I don't really know. So I was living in Studio City at the time. I go over the hill into LA and park near the Viper Room, and I'm standing outside. And I try to call this girl and she's not answering and I can't find her. And I'm like, all right, I don't know if I can get in. And I don't know if I had any money on me.
Oh.
And I was like, the guy at the door was saying it was going to be $15 to get in. And I was like, okay, let me see if I can get a hold of my friend. So she comes around the corner and she's like, oh yeah, you don't have to paint again. Get in, come right in. And like, apparently her friend was a good friend of the manager at the Viper Room. Oh, yeah. And so we just got right in and didn't have to pay.
Nice.
And they tell us, we walk up to the bar and somebody just hands me a beer and they were like, yeah, it's free. Don't worry about it. Your drinks are free tonight.
Wow.
I was like, what? I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I didn't even know the guy that was hooking us up with like free entrance into the club and free drinks. But I was like, I made it a point to like thank him and introduce myself. And they sit us down at a booth at those like reserved booths up by the stage.
Okay. Yeah.
And I was like, okay, now we've got a great seat. And so there's like, you know, there's a couple of random bands playing, kind of opening the night. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the curtain at the Viper Room closes in between bands. And right. So we're waiting. It's time. Oh no, somebody brought in pizza from down the street. They wouldn't let me contribute to paying. So wow. I got free food. I was like, this is crazy. What's the deal? This night couldn't get any better.
Right.
You know, and... You know, I was like, these people are just being super nice. Mm-hmm. And so the curtain closes again after like the second band, and we're waiting to see what's going to happen for this like main act, the headlining act. And so the manager at the Viper Room texts our friend and says, sorry, it looks like Taylor Hawkins isn't going to be able to show up after all.
Oh.
And we're all really bummed out, and we're thinking about leaving. And then somebody was like, let's just stick around and see. Like, they've got to be doing something for a headlining act, right? Like, what's the deal?
They're not just going to close the club.
Right.
Yeah. And I could hear people setting up gear behind the curtain on the stage. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you know, there's got to be something going on. Curtain opens, and there's Dave Grohl at the front of the stage.
No.
And he was literally, you know, maybe 10 feet away from me. And so everyone just starts freaking out, you know. And basically, what I came to find was that it was Rami Jaffee's birthday. Rami was the keyboard player from the Wallflowers.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And at the time, I think he's playing with them still currently, but there was a couple of years recently where Rami was playing keyboard for the Foo Fighters.
Yes.
And so it was his birthday, and he basically just invited out a bunch of his friends to get together and jam at the Viper Room. And so within the next like half an hour, the place was packed, you know, because people are calling their friends, and everyone's finding out that Dave Grohl and Rami are
calling your friends. Guys, Dave Grohl, Viper Room, now.
Yes, exactly. You know,
next
so the place
when that
getting,
happens, call us.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, like this night can get better. Like, this is crazy. Like, this can't get any better now. And you know, so we've got these great seats, and Dave and some friends are playing through just a bunch of covers. Like, they were doing, I think, Under Pressure by David Bowie and Queen. And they did Come Together by the Beatles and all these random songs. And so maybe like eight songs into the set or something, Dave was probably smart in thinking, this place is getting a little too crazy. It's getting a little too packed. Maybe I should head home. Mm. He was just kind of like, all right, guys, it's been fun. Like, I'm going to head out. And because he was the biggest star on stage, but it wasn't supposed to be like his night. Mm-hmm. It was Rami's night. So right. I think Dave wanted to kind of bow out.
I get that.
Right.
I later became friends with a few of these guys. The one guy's name was Morty. And Morty, who I didn't know at the time, looks out into the crowd and he's like, all right, well, Dave's going home. Somebody want to come up on stage and play guitar? And I stood up on the table of our booth and raised my hand into the air. And he looked right at me and pointed. And I was the first one to respond to him.
Nice.
And he pointed at me and was like, all right, come on stage. And I hopped up and like literally was like climbing over people to get through the crowd stage. I think at one point, like I put my hand on someone's head to like get up on the stage, like clamoring. And Dave handed me the guitar. Dave Grohl handed me his guitar.
Oh.
And they asked me, they were like, all right, we're going to play something or other. And at that point I had been in a couple of different wedding bands and I had been in few different cover bands. So whatever they wanted to play, I was like, I probably either already know the song or I could fake my way through it.
Right.
So they just kept throwing songs at me and I was like, sure, whatever. I can play that. I can play that, whatever. And so I got to play with Rami which was really fun because he's just an amazing piano player.
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And so I get off stage and people like bum rushed me and thought and started asking me like who I was.
Right.
And they thought it was a setup. They were like, they didn't actually, you know, people were like yelling at me. Like they didn't actually just pick some random person out of the crowd to play guitar.
Yeah.
You already rehearsed with them. Like, who are
you?
And I was like, no, really? Like, I'm just some guy. Like, my name's Mark. You know?
You should have been like, are you serious? I'm Mark from Hollowell.
Uh-huh. Yeah, right.
You don't know me?
You don't know me? And so it got, like, it actually got a little intense where, like, everyone was, like, bum rushing me. And so I slipped out the back door and was like, at the time I was still smoking cigarettes and I was like, I'm going to go have a smoke and just kind of get away from everybody for a second.
Right.
And so who's standing on the corner still waiting for his car to arrive to take him home? But Dave Grohl.
Oh boy.
Wasn't he surrounded by people? Sorry. Vibe Room is like tiny. You should be able to like,
it is quite a small place. Well, so most of the people were still inside the club.
Mm-hmm.
I think part of Dave's idea was like, he wanted to get out of there before everyone left the club.
But
while it was still kind of empty on the sidewalk, he wanted to go call a car and get out of there.
Makes sense.
So, and he was with his wife. So him and his wife, Jordan, I believe is her name, were standing on the sidewalk on Sunset on the corner there in front of like the liquor store and waiting for their car next to the Viper Room. And I walked up and he had like a small crowd of people around him, like asking him to sign stuff and take pictures. And there was some guy, there was some guy like calling his friend and trying to like have Dave talk to his friend on the phone. And everybody was kind of like bothering them, and you could see that he was like hoping that his car was going to show up soon so he could get home to his little girls, you know. And I walked up and I was like, hey man, I don't mean to bother you. I don't need a picture or an autograph or anything. I was like, I'm the guy that just hopped up on stage and finished out the set. You know, like I just wanted to, I'm a big fan of yours. I just wanted to shake your hand. So to further that story, Dave is originally from Youngstown, Ohio.
Yeah.
Are you serious?
Dave Grohl was born in Warren, Ohio.
See, no kidding. Warren.
And he still has family in Warren, Ohio. And, he recently, this is a few years ago now, a year before the Viper Room show, I was still living in Ohio. The city of Warren decided to dedicate a street to Dave.
No kidding.
And they actually got Dave Grohl to come back to like the town square in Warren for a music festival. And Dave played and he unveiled like this street sign that they were dedicating to him. And local artists were doing like murals of him and his art.
Wow.
All along the street.
So there's Dave Grohl Street?
Yeah, there's like, I think it's called David Grohl Alley.
See, and now I want to go to Ohio.
And it's and Warren, Ohio actually also has, I believe they have the world record now for the largest drumstick in the world.
Nice.
No kidding.
That they have like in the center of town for Dave.
Aww.
And so I went to this thing and saw him, you know, unveil the street sign and play the acoustic set. And so when I walked up to him at the Viper Room, I was like, Dave, I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. I was at that thing in Warren last year when they dedicated that to you. And he was like, no shit. He gave me a big hug.
Aww.
And he was like, how you doing, man? And we just started talking like old friends. And he was super nice. And we just kind of had a little moment where I was able to like, you know, thank him for all the inspiration and just, you know, I was like, I just had such a crazy night. Like, thank you so much. Like, that was awesome. We said goodbye and their car pulled up and they headed home.
Nice.
Wow.
And that's one of the
coolest. I don't even know where to go from here. I mean, that's just the most epic story we could have gotten.
The best night ever.
Like, all right. This so thank like you the, so much for, no, I'm just kidding.
This is like your first Bueller moment. Seriously. It's like one of the days that you just like, you can't top.
No,
it's very hard to top that.
It was insane. I mean, it was like the stars aligned that day. It was really amazing.
What would you say has been one of your biggest challenges and how have you overcome it?
Trying to live up to that day.
Yeah, right?
That's not even a joke. Like trying to live up to that day. no, I think, you know, as an artist, I think overcoming yourself is kind of the is the biggest problem sometimes. I am one of those people, my fiance could tell you this. I'm one of those people that when
congratulations.
Thank you. That's a recent development in my life.
Congratulations.
I proposed over Christmas.
Aww. Oh my God, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. But she would tell you better than anybody, as a person, when I get stressed out, I get tired. If I'm just really overwhelmed, I'll take a nap.
That's such a nice thing. I just freak out and annoy him.
Yeah, she can't sleep.
I can't sleep.
I go straight to, I mean, I'm the same way. I sleep.
I just, yeah, like my body just like shuts down. I just, you know, I just go to sleep if I'm really stressed out.
Well, we actually have a new challenge for you. We are up to our segment, the question of the week. So in this segment, we'll ask our interviewees a new question every week, and they have to think of the funniest answer that they can come up with. To our listeners out there, write in your questions on our Facebook at facebook.com/entertainmentdrivethrough and our Twitter at edrivethrough, and we just might use it as the question of the week. Now, Mark, are you ready?
I'm scared.
You're scared. Don't be scared. All right, so question is, what is one of the funniest things one of your parents has ever said or done?
What is one of the funniest things my parents have ever said or done? My parents are crazy, so I don't know. All right, here's a good one.
Okay.
My dad might be pretty embarrassed if he had heard me say this. But my dad is one of those dudes that like always worked very hard for a living. Like he worked on the railroad for 40 years.
Oh, wow.
Really great father. My parents are still together and I've always looked up to him. He's always been a really hardworking, really intelligent dude and was never, ever the kind of guy that would ever hit his kids. Right. Like right. He just wasn't ever that guy. I think his parents might've been like, they were like old Italians that would follow you around with like a belt buckle. He absolutely would never hit his kids, but there was one time where my sister made him so mad that he punched a hole in her bedroom door.
Whoa.
She pissed him off so bad.
Oh my goodness.
He just felt like he had to take his anger out on something, and she had locked the door and wouldn't let him in the bedroom, and he just punched a hole right through the door.
Oh my God. Didn't that hurt his hand? I'm just saying.
Apparently not. I mean, it was like a Superman moment.
Wow.
He was able to let his anger out on something, and then he was like immediately afterwards super embarrassed because my sister probably pissed herself. Like she...
I don't blame her.
Dude, imagine I'm not going to lie. I probably would have s***ed my pants.
Like imagine her on the other side of the door as, you know, like a middle school or a high school kid, however old she was at the time. And she like wouldn't let her father in. And she's probably crying over something. I don't know, whatever it was that. And we were, I think she had like left the dinner table because she was angry about something, you know, high school girl stuff.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they got into it. And so like the rest of us are sitting at the dinner table, just kind of like staring at each other like, as my dad yells through the door at her, and she's like being, you know, like a little girl and like won't let him in, and this, and it escalated, and then I just remember like my grandma being like, what just happened? You know, and my mom being like, nothing. You know, and everyone just kind of knowing like, yeah, dad just punched a hole in the door.
No big deal, just punched a hole in the wall.
Like, he walked back into the kitchen and just like with his head down and was just like, now I have to fix that.
I love that's the first thing.
Well, getting back to the interview, what is some of the best advice you've ever received?
And what advice would you have for up-and-comers who just moved here?
I recently saw something on YouTube that I really, I'm a big fan of the musician Charlie Hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Mm, yeah.
He plays an 8-string guitar. It's like a bass and a guitar, like all in one. Mm-hmm. And he's a really, really phenomenal musician. Like you would think that it would be gimmicky, but like Charlie Hunter uses the 8-string guitar in like a really, really inspired way. Like he's just very soulful and very proficient at the instrument. And like you see him play and you can understand like, oh, well, like that's like really original. you know, what, mm-hmm. what he does. And I just remember watching something recently on YouTube. It was an interview with him, and he was saying, you know, you can't ever expect to be some sort of high-paid, famous artist. That's not something that you can expect. It's maybe something that you can hope for, but it's not something that usually will come. Mm-hmm. You know, it's rare that you see that. So right. he was like, in my own life as a professional musician, he was thinking, how could I kind of justify being a working musician? You know, like what benchmark should I set myself at? Mm-hmm. And so he started thinking, what other professions do I respect? Who out there could I respect as a professional career, you know, working person?
Right.
And how much money did they make? So he started thinking, you know, like, how much does a plumber make? You know, how much does an electrician make? Mm-hmm. How much do, you know, how much does a carpenter make? Some of these, like, really kind of salt of the earth, respectable positions, like somebody who fixes guitars for a living, like makes guitars for a living, a luthier, you know, like a guitar technician, any of these kind of everyday dudes that work really hard and work full time and have respectable careers, how much money did they make? And if I can make that much money as a musician, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. then I think that I can call myself a professional and, right. and be happy with my level of success.
Absolutely. Do you have any like favorite book that you look up either for like inspiration or just to learn new things about the music business or?
You know, I actually like to read a lot of biographies of artists. I've read Slash's autobiography. I have read Anthony Kiedis's autobiography. I'm currently reading Dave Grohl's biography. That was a gift. That was a gift. I also got a book that I haven't been able to start reading yet. The one I'm going to read next is a Bob Dylan biography.
Oh, cool.
That sounds awesome. I can't remember.
I think it's his autobiography. But yeah, so those are the, I like to see kind of the trajectory, the careers of artists I like. I like to dig deeper and read about their lives. Right. So.
I'm so curious, just before we leave, when you do the film screen, do you just do it for friends or do you go through music libraries or publishing companies or you just do it, yeah, because your friends need it?
My scoring has kind of turned into more of a professional career lately. Nice. It started off as just being through friends, but these days, this past summer, I was a part of a film crew. We worked on the 48-hour film festival.
Yeah, wow. Congratulations on that.
Yeah, congrats, man.
Thank you. Yeah, I didn't win, but I was nominated. You were nominated. For best music.
You were nominated.
Hey, a nomination is a nomination.
Well, I was super happy with it. We had a lot of fun working on the movie, and it's tough because you literally only have 48 hours to do everything. So I only had like 5 hours to do the score. And I was just really, it was nice to be able to like go to a premiere of a movie and be nominated for best music. And so since then, I've been working on even more projects and have been able to actually get involved in some films that actually have budgets, you Yay! Know, like that are actually... I'm able to actually make a little bit of money now. So there's a new movie that I really can't talk about quite yet. It's still in production. But I am about to start scoring a new film. They just wrapped up filming this past week, and now we're starting the editing phase. And there's a few other – if you go to markcatalanomusic.com or even my YouTube channel, youtube.com/markacatalano, middle initial A for Adam, nice. youtube.com/markacatalano. Either of those sites will show you kind of all of the scoring that I've done thus far. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Mark, for being on the show. It's really been a pleasure interviewing you.
Thank you. Thank you. And I should also mention that if anybody's interested, hollowellmusic.com is our band's website. Hollowell is actually in the studio right now. We are working on releasing a new single.
Yay!
Oh, so nice.
So anybody that goes to the website and signs up for the mailing list, we will send them a free song.
Nice. Oh, excellent. And we will post information on it on our website as to when that comes out so people can know to look for it.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And, yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, and for more information on Mark Hollowell and the podcast, go to entertainmentdrivethru.com and subscribe on iTunes. Like and follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/entertainmentdrivethru and our Twitter and Instagram at edrivethru.
Hey, this is Mark Catalano, and you've been listening to the Entertainment Drive-Thru.